And welcome again to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. It's Saturday, November 23rd. It's no wonder, is it really, that the first opportunity I would have to get Elmo Shropshire on, that I would do it. Maybe we're just kindred spirits. I met Elmo, years ago. Maybe between the both of us we can remember when it was. But he is the Dr. Elmo, the Dr. Elmo of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer and a whole lot of other music also. And he's a veterinarian, and he's going to be on the show in just a second. But in case you didn't know, in case you weren't fully aware of the impact that Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer has had on the entire world, you know, it has sold 11 million copies. Now, to put that in perspective, Elmo is second behind Elvis in the Sony Christmas catalog. So if I can get Elvis, fine. I couldn't this year because I didn't think of it soon enough, but I was able to get Elmo. He has sold 11 million copies of that song that we all love, but we pretend to hate sometimes when we're out in public. But it's a wonderful tune. Isn't it just a great infectious tune? It started in 1979. It's a funny little story. We'll talk about this with Elmo, but some of the highlights that I want to point out in case I forget. 1979, it got its first airplay in San Francisco. The next year, this just tickles me. The next year, the Gray Panthers picketed a Dr. Elmo concert because they thought his song was ageist, sexist, and violent, like as if he were advocating that people go run over their grandma with some reindeers, because everybody's got reindeer, right? So you're just looking for something to do with them in the off season. In 1982, it was the most requested Christmas song in radio history. 83, it's got 3 years, 85, I'm sorry, 3 years in a row, it's now outselling Bing Crosby's White Christmas. This is phenomenal. There are animated movies. He's been interviewed on every major network, which is just very cool that he was nice enough to come on here. I know he's starting a real crazy season for him. It is now back, and as of 2012, it's back to the number one selling song on Billboard's Christmas. That's Elmo calling right now. You think he would say a song or something? Isn't that cool? Hold on a second. They're so anxious to be on. This is kind of interesting. Hold on. All right, let's try this. Elmo, are you on the phone?
I'm here.
Oh, good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and happy birthday to you, Steve.
Ah, you heard that.
Yes, I did. Is it the 29th? I don't know your actual age. I'm just going by the photo.
Yes, I'm 29 years old. You are correct.
Okay.
I was just reading through this incredible list of accomplishments, you know, and here's the thing, folks. When I met Dr. Elmo, it was, how many years ago was it, Elmo, that you went to a banjo camp with Bill Evans and Sonny Osborne? That's where I first met you.
Maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And I had to actually invoke the name of Bill Evans to get a hold of you. You're on Facebook, and I thought, I remember him. As I'm getting ready for shows, I'm thinking he's probably really busy soon, but maybe I can invoke the Bill Evans name and snag you. At the time that I contacted you, and we'll talk about this too, because Elmo does so many amazing things, and I'm just going to say that to embarrass you, but you were in Brazil. You remember I sent you a message?
I was in Brazil, yeah.
You were in Brazil, and I sent you a message, I guess, back then in October, just thinking, hey, could I get Dr. Elmo on the show? And I sent you a message on Facebook, and you were in Brazil. And what? Tell everybody what you were doing in Brazil, just so they don't think that you're an internationally known recording star. What were you doing in Brazil?
I went there to run in the World Masters Games, which is pretty much like the Olympics for everyone over 35. And there's a lot of Olympians there, you know, that just turned 35. And from all over the world. It's an exciting time. I went there to watch a great running friend of mine run. And he said, well, you should sign up for a couple of things too and run. So I did sign up for the for the 5K and the 400. And so I finished seventh in the 5K. And in the 400, I qualified to run on the U.S. team for the 400. And we won. So it was one of the highlights of my life to win a gold medal in one of those world championships.
So not only do we have Elmo, who's the star of entertainment everywhere, you're also a gold medal winner, right?
I'm happy to say I am. It's hard to believe.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I met you, you remember the facility we were in Nashville,
yes,
for this banjo camp. And, you know, folks, just, and if you've never been to one of these things, it's a very opulent affair in that You're just fed great food all the time. You're surrounded by the world's greatest musicians. I know Sonny was there, and Sonny was still playing then, Sonny Osborne, and Bill Evans, yeah, and Ned Lubrecki. And I'm trying to think, was it Tony Trischka or Alan Mundy? I forget which one. When you were there.
Maybe Alan Mundy.
Could have been Alan. So there's all this great playing, and they just stuff you full of food. And at one point, I see Elmo just running through the woods. You took off running.
Oh, that's right. I was running there,
too. That's right.
I was trying to get ready for my Masters Championship then. Took a long time to get ready.
Well, it must have worked out. I mean, you had a long-range plan because now you're a world champion gold medal winner. So that's that's amazing. Gosh, you know, I'm really, thank you so much for being available. I know you must be getting into your real crazy season as far as appearances.
We are. And I think that you're like a one-man promotional wave for me today.
I'm trying.
Few days. Thank you so much.
I'm trying, dude. Listen, I love what you're doing, and I know you play a banjo, it's just one of those things where, you know, I try to get as many banjo players on as I can, just because it's just so much fun for me to do it that way. But
my hat's off to you for that. All the banjo players need a little extra help.
I think you're right. I think we all need as much exposure as we can get. And that's the thing is, folks, that Elmo is a serious banjo player. I mean, you have Dr. Elmo and Wild Blue, and I have that album here. And you have some. I'm going to talk a little bit, if you have a minute, I'm going to talk about, of course, the song. But I also want to talk about how you got into, I don't want to use the term novelty song, but you know what I'm saying, the kind of funny, clever stuff, because you have more than one. I mean, and I think you're just kind of bent that way, if I'm not mistaken. I think that Elmo, I think that you latched on to Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer as much as it latched on to you. I just think that I've met you, and I've hang around you for a couple of days at a time, and I just think you have a good sense of humor.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, it is something that sort of worked out for me. I was trying to play bluegrass somewhat seriously. And, you know, I just wanted to play the banjo, never thought about singing. And when I first started out, nobody else in the band wanted to sing either. Everybody just wanted to play. That's sort of the way bluegrass players
that's
are.
That's kind of happening, especially banjo players. We just keep our head down and play.
Because it's hard to play the banjo and sing at the same time.
I listen. People ask me, Elmo, why don't you smile more when you're playing? I say, because it's hard.
I can't. My most of the rest of my body is paralyzed other than my hands. And they're kind of like that these days.
Well, now, look, in all fairness, I've seen the video from your supersonic reindeer band perform. And I would not exactly say you were paralyzed. Of course, when you had the guitar, you jumped all around and you were running all around the stage. So let's just say maybe with a banjo in your hand, you're paralyzed. But Elmo's the most energetic. Not only are you winning world championships, you are a nonstop bundle of energy on stage, what I've seen on YouTube.
Well, thank you very much.
Which to me, it just indicates you're having so much fun playing this music.
I do love to play on stage and play this kind of music. And I don't exactly know how I came by it. When I was playing the banjo in the early days when I was first learning, and nobody wanted to sing, I started singing a little bit just because nobody else wanted to sing. And whenever I would sing a song, everybody would be laughing at me. You know, even if I was singing a song like Love Come Home, everyone would laugh or smile a little bit when I was singing that, even though it wasn't a funny song. It was just like they thought I was funny when I was singing. So that's how I got into start singing funny songs, because it seems like no matter what I sang, it seemed to be funny.
Well,
even if it was Silent Night.
Silent Night. Well, you know, but you got to go with what your strength is, I think.
Yeah,
after a while, I think you're comfortable with that now after all these years, right?
Oh, I am, yes, and I like it when people smile if I sing something that's not supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
I just have to go with the flow.
Well, let's talk a little bit about first, since I do have so many banjo players that are on the show. What kind of a banjo are you playing? What would you consider to be your main instrument right now? If you're serious Elmo and you want to play some serious banjo music, what are you playing?
I have a 1936 Granada that has a... It has a, you know, it's not a new neck, but it wasn't an original five string, but it was an original. I don't know how it was originally, But when I got it, it was I had a new neck made for it by Larry Cohey, I think in 1970.
Yeah.
But that's the best Jim banjo I've had, and Larry makes such great necks that it not only does it never go out of tune, or hardly ever go out of tune, which is unusual for a banjo, but when I capo it up, it doesn't go out of tune either.
Well, that's good.
I mean, that's all to Larry Cohey. It's not just because it's a Granada.
Well, the neck is important. I mean, depending on who you talk to, a lot of people think the neck is the most important piece of the whole operation.
Yeah. And I bought this banjo in 1968. And over the years, you know, somebody said, maybe like 25 years ago or something, someone said, that banjo is probably worth $5,000 or $10,000. And I thought, no, you know, I paid $700 for it. and now, you know, people say it's worth a lot more than that, you know, like 10 times more.
I think they're probably right, but I would just say, if you like it, hold on to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the thing. Once you're happy with the banjo, don't ever let it go.
Yeah, if you have a banjo like that.
Yeah. So we've talked yet. You said playing the banjo and you started singing because. But how long have you been playing the banjo? And why did you want to?
I started when I was about 35 years old. One day, this is funny. I was driving down the road and I heard Foggy Mountain Breakdown come on, and it was just the most incredible thing. I couldn't imagine what anybody could be doing to make that sound. And that's one of the first things that tipped me off. And I saw the Kingston Trio a little bit. And even though I'm from Kentucky, I didn't know about Bill Monroe. And, you know, I just listened to Elvis. I didn't know about Bill Monroe, you know, Flat and Scruggs.
Yeah.
And those guys for a while later.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, when I heard Earl Scruggs playing Foggy Mountain Breakdown, it something clicked and just turned me. I thought, wouldn't it be a lifetime dream to be able to step on a stage and play that.
You know, I think your experience is not unlike a lot of banjo players, that the first time they hear Earl, and specifically if the first time they hear Earl is playing Foggy Mountain Breakdown, it's a stunning experience, because that's the same thought. You know, I was, interview's not about me, but I went to Bonnie and Clyde. I saw the movie and people were talking about how many times they were shot at the end. And I kept thinking, what is that sound? What is the sound of it? How can a human being make that sound? And I left the theater. We were just kids. Walked up to the local movie house. And I kept thinking, what in the world could do that? And I think that response is not unusual. And then you're crazy enough to get a banjo. Well, then you're hooked.
Yeah, it's a fascinating instrument. I know that, you know, a lot of people make fun of banjos, and I think a lot of it comes from, you know, like Dixieland and things like that, which, you know, those banjo players are really good too, but. But Earl Scruggs' style is so fascinating, and it's just hard to imagine that a man could have come up with something so complex.
And yet
so sounds so, well, it sounds complex too.
Well, it's so perfect, and when you first just start thinking, you think, well, it's so perfect it sounds easy, but then you realize it really is perfect, and it's not easy. And everything he did was just the master's touch. I mean, he's the one that really kicked it all off.
Yes.
I mean, and there are great players today that do nothing but listen to Earl every day. And over and over and over, and they'll say, I heard something different this time. I'm thinking, I don't have those kind of ears, but those people can.
Yeah, well, you know, Bill Evans, I take banjo lessons from him. I live, you know, close to him out here in California. And that's one of the great things that he teaches the Earl method. And it's so good that it's like once you can play the, you know, you can just go back and back and back and keep learning from Earl.
And we have to give credit to Bill. Bill is has become a good friend of mine. I know he's your teacher. He's my teacher. He's a friend of mine. He's been on the show several times. And I'll just say this about Bill Evans, and you would agree. If there is a more consummate teacher, player, historian, writer than Bill Evans on banjo, you got to look a hard time to find someone. That Bill does everything at a level that's just, he can not only play the most extraordinary stuff, but he can bring it down to the level that guys like you and I can get it.
Absolutely.
And he's a nice guy.
And he's a very inspirational guy. Every time I go to see, I could go and take a lesson from Bill and not even take my banjo and come away, you know, really inspired, really wanting to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has that. He has that effect. He's just, he's like from maybe next in line behind Earl. He's like inspiring people, you know, with his books and everything.
Oh yeah,
the banjo
for Idiots which last time I talked to him, he was getting ready to release the second edition. I know he's working full time on that, but I have this.
To think I inspired him to write that book.
Wait, you caught me on that one. Hold on a second. Okay, we'll let the audience figure that out. Okay, I have. You were nice enough to send me when we talked. You were nice enough, or Pam was nice enough to send me some, the Bluegrass Christmas, which is kind of like your bluegrass band, and you're playing instrumental things. When we're finished here, I was gonna get into some of the tunes from. I want to talk to you now. When we're finished, I was gonna play the instrumental version of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. But you also have Dr. Elmo and Wild Blue, and that's on the Laughing Stock Records. The Bluegrass Christmas is on Hallmark? Time Life. Yeah. So and on the Wild Blue album, you do have all these great standards. You've got Hello City Limits and you've got Fox on the Run. So you're really into the bluegrass, the old sound. And you also have some more of the novelty type. You have Dr. Kevorkian, and you have some things in there, Wild Dogs of Kentucky, that are just, again, I think your sense of humor is just going to come through no matter what you're trying to do. You're not going to, Elmo's never going to do an album of straight music without one or two songs that'll make you kind of smile a little bit. That's just my opinion. But it's a great album. You got great playing on it. And
thank you.
It's fun. It's fun stuff. What do you, this is an odd circumstance, Elmo. I was, someone had asked me about Homer and Jethro, and this week I've had Homer and Jethro in my car listening to it. And I just wonder, was there a novelty type sound? Not that everything you do is a novelty record. I don't mean that at all. But was there something like that in your head? Are you just naturally a happy guy who likes to have a good time and has a sense of humor that comes through your music? But when I was listening to Homer and Jethro, I thought, I bet Elmo would like these guys.
I love Homer and Jethro. I mean, they were the original guys. I guess Weird Al is sort of an original, you know, a guy who does parodies a lot of stuff. And even though Jethro Burns is probably one of the greatest mandolin players of his generation.
Oh, yeah.
And generations to come. They were fantastic when they did those parodies. And I remember them doing the great parody of How Much Is That Doggy in the Wonder?
That's right.
And they had that great line that said, "How much is that hound dog in the window? I do hope that flea bag's for sale. How much is that hound dog in the window? The one with the long mangy tail."
That's it.
I just couldn't. I love that line so much.
I had a feeling that you were going to be a Homer and Jethro fan, and I threw that at you because I just know it's going to stick. I knew you had to be a fan of them somewhere. Well, then you had them, and then you had like, they were on the one side, and you had Alan Sherman, and I remember Stan Freberg too. If you think back to some of those comedy parody things, and then like you said, the more modern version, I guess, is Weird Al. But I knew you'd be hooked into Homer and Jethro. That's great, and everything fit so well. The timing of the syllables that they used and the music that they used, and they just had that great attitude, which I think that you have. Again, I'm not trying to. Of course, you know, maybe you wouldn't be offended by saying you're on par with Homer and Jethro. I would hope that you would not.
Yeah, I would not only be offended, I'd be honored.
There are
mentioned in the same line with those guys.
There is now this, and this just blows my mind. Right now, I'm looking at all this information that was sent to me, and I'm so glad I got this. By the way, that as of last year, you're back on top on the Christmas Billboard chart again.
Yeah, you know, I think around 1983, the Grandma song I recorded in '79, and in 1983, well, you know, at first everybody didn't like it. People hated it, and radio stations would play it, and somebody would complain. But then, but in 1983, it was number one on Billboard's chart because, you know, DJs were playing it all over the country. A lot of the reason they were playing it is because most people who were going to request a Christmas song knew they were going to play White Christmas anyway, but they hadn't heard the song where Grandma gets killed at Christmas, and they were curious to see what it was, what it sounded like. So they started calling up and requesting it.
That was, yeah. Well, that, you know, that works. Whatever you got to drag them in. Now, when you recorded this song, and I've seen the story before and heard you talk about it, how you got the song from a band, from another musician, correct?
Yes, a guy named Randy Brooks. We were up in Tahoe playing, and after I was doing some novelty songs that I wrote at the time, and after our show, he came up and he said, "I have a song that I think would be perfect for you." And I said, "Well, let's hear it." So he got up and played "Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer," and there wasn't any, you know, huge response from the audience at the time, but I immediately thought, this is the most unusual. It has all the elements of a warm White Christmas Bing Crosby, but, you know, the fact that Grandma gets killed, you know, is really something to sort of wake up the audience. Yeah, how does that sort of Bing Crosby stupor and say, this is something unusual?
A little bit. Yeah, if you're knocking off Grandma in the midst of all the white snow and the chestnuts roasting on it, it's a little different. It's a little twisted.
I know.
Well, why did this guy think it would be a good song for you? That's what I don't get.
Well, he's, at the time, I guess people were still laughing at whatever I sang, no matter what it was, and he thought maybe that would, this song would be a good song for me to sing. And the other reason is, I guess people wouldn't take the song that seriously. They, you know, if I was singing it, they wouldn't think that it actually happened. But the first recording we made of it in 79, I sang it sort of as if it did actually happen. I was pretty deadpan with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1982, I made a new recording that we were trying to sell to Sony. And in the new recording, I'm a little more uplifting and, you know, maybe a little more tongue-in-cheek version.
Is it true, and I read this right where you called in, is it true that the Grey Panthers picketed one of your concerts?
They did.
That's unbelievable.
You know, we had a, there was a big furor happening in San Francisco over the song. This is probably in 1980, and there was the Boarding House. The Boarding House is where Steve Martin made one of his first popular albums, the other Steve Martin.
The other one.
Yes. And anyway, we got a chance to play at the Boarding House because, the song was being played on the radio all the time. And went down there, and we were on the bill with Asleep at the Wheel. And so when we were driving down there, I could see that there was a huge crowd outside. And Asleep at the Wheel wasn't a big name then, you know, they were on their way. So I thought, this is going to be great. And there was a huge crowd outside waiting to get in.
It should be
a great night, because most of the time, Steve, we were just playing at pizza parlors where we were playing next to, you know, kids on a rocking horse and that kind of thing. You know, not in, like, concert halls. So when I got up closer, I began to notice that all these people milling around the front of the club all had picket signs. And it said, "What's so funny about a dead grandma?" And they said, "You know, we hate this song, and we love you, but we hate your song." And so then when we went in the club, I thought I was going to, and then they called me up on the phone, the Grey Panthers, and said, "You know, you're going to have to stop singing this song."
No kidding.
Yeah. They were serious. And, of course, at the time, I thought, this is it. You know, I finally got something close to being a hit, and now I'm going to have to stop singing it. But, of course, that night, by a slow news day, but all the television cameras came out to cover the happening there. And, next day, man, it blew up all over San Francisco, and there were sort of shock waves all over California about it. And that's when I thought, well, you know, maybe it was a good thing that the Grey Panthers did that.
So they actually thought you were in favor of running over Grandma. Somehow they got the message wrong. Yeah.
Well, they thought it was, they said it was ageist, sexist, and violent against women. pretty much what they said.
And so you had the perfect chance to run over a few of them as you got there, had you known.
That's right.
You could have clipped a few of them just to prove the point. Then, buddy, talk about headlines. Talk about your headlines then. That would have, but that's all past now. You can't go back and recreate that moment. Oh, man. And I go through the list of what you've done, and it's just, I mean, this has been a good, you have to wake up, and you're a veterinarian, right? I mean, I want to let everybody know why you're Dr. Elmo. I don't know if we've touched on that yet. I may have just briefly before you called in, but.
That's right. Yeah. I used to give, I had a couple of disc jockey friends that are radio personalities here in San Francisco, and I used to give veterinary advice. What we would usually do is people would call in for veterinary advice, and they'd give something that was wrong with their animal, and then the radio personality would give a funny answer, and this is sort of a reverse, and then I'd give them the real answer to what the problem, to the problem if I knew it. So nobody could say Dr. Shropshire. Shropshire is too hard of a name for the average person. And so that's when everybody just forgot about the Shropshire name and just started calling me Dr. Elmo.
Well, that works. And I see this reference in here to some sort of a famous horse that was that in Florida when you were actually working?
It was in Florida.
Yeah.
When I was a young man, I was grew up in Kentucky, and when I was a teenager, I moved to Florida to a horse farm there. And there was a horse. Well, every year I used to break the yearlings. It was just myself and a couple of other guys. And one of the yearlings was a horse named Needles. They named him Needles because he had so many. He was so sick and so close to dying that they gave him injections every day to try and keep him alive.
Oh, wow.
And so that's why they named him Needles. And then I started riding him as a yearling. This was in Ocala, Florida. And I was his exercise boy while he was a yearling. And early in his career as a two-year-old until he went to the racetrack and started racing. And as a three-year-old, he won the Kentucky Derby, got beat by a nose in the Preakness, and he won the Belmont.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, pretty exciting. That was my first brush with fame.
Well, yeah, and then you've had many. That's the thing is you've done, and I was telling people when the phone rang that I wanted everyone to know that there's a lot more to Elmo Shropshire than just the grandma. You've done so many different things. I mean, you're an accomplished vet, and you're a musician, and you run still, which is an amazing thing. And then you just have this nice little thing to come back to. And the great thing about a seasonal song, Elmo, as you know, the season comes every year.
That is the greatest thing about a seasonal song. And a lot of times people think it's kind of new because they haven't heard it for 11 months. So then when they hear it, nowadays it's sort of like an old friend coming back for Christmas.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it's become a I think it's one of those things where I think sometimes people, depending on the situation or the public they're in, they might, well, I don't really like it. But the fact is they all love it.
Right.
You know what I mean? There might be people that think, well, I don't want to admit that I'm crazy about that song, but the reality is you wouldn't have sold 11 million copies of it if some people didn't like it.
You know, one of the great things about that song is we've heard, in the past about where there would be turntable hits where a lot of people would hear the song, but not a lot of people would buy it. But in this case, it was just the opposite of that. Everyone wanted to own this song for some reason. In 1984 was the first year we signed with Epic Records, which is now Sony.
Right.
And people had been hearing the song for 5 years, but there was no place where they could buy it. So Epic did a great job of distributing it. A lot of people don't understand, like, if you want to sell a million records, you have to buy a million first and then put them out there and
that's
hope you can sell
right.
them all.
And you got to hope you can find a place to distribute them.
Right. So Epic put out the single and the album in December of 1984. And during that month of December, that was the biggest seller on Epic's, on Epic's catalog.
That is just amazing.
You, Michael Jackson's Thriller was out that year on Epic.
Oh, no.
So Thriller, you know, obviously outsold the Grandma song, but for that December, the Grandma song was number one in their catalog.
Do you wake up in the morning every day and think, man, this is pretty cool?
I do. I think it's cool all the time. It's such a great thing. This, you know, Randy Brooks, we've become great friends.
The songwriter.
Over the years, and I just thought if anybody could ever give you something, if somebody gave you $1 million or you won the lottery, most people would think, well, you know, he's just some lucky bum that, you know, won a lot of money. But when he gave me the song, it's like a lot of people, I don't know if we'd say that they have respect for me now.
But oh, they do.
At least, you know, they have something other than, well, you know, I just got a lot of money.
Well,
and it's been, I mean, it's been great for me to be able to play on Christmas concerts, you know, with big name acts. It's just opened the door to a really one of the most exciting things that I could have in life.
Well, I mean, look at all the people that you've performed with. I mean, it's just you were on a bill with Peter Frampton and George Thorogood and Pat Benatar and Hilary Duff and Avril Lavigne and Gwen Stefani. I mean, this is crazy.
I know. I know.
I mean, that in a good way, friend. I mean, this is amazing.
It runs the gamut. Like with the Grandma song, I started out singing it on some oldies concerts and actually was on the bill with Bobby Helms of Jingle Bell Rock for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, well, that's good. I'd love to be on the oldies because there's a lot of people I've admired. And now I'm in the dressing room with them. And then pretty soon, you know, other, like, younger acts, you know, people would say, well, you want to come sing on this Christmas show? And there would be, like, teenage acts, you know, like Avril Lavigne. And I played on a concert with him at the Arco Arena in Sacramento. It was like 16,000 people. 16,000 people. All of them were girls between the age of 12 and 16. Can you imagine that audience? And when I sang the part that says, should we open up our gifts or send them back? They all knew the song, and they screamed in this high-pitched thing that said, send them back! And I wasn't able to hear for another hour after that.
Oh man! Well, this has to begin. I know you've probably got network interviews lined up from now through New Year's. You're probably going to be everywhere. And I look at the past. You've been all over the morning TVs, the big networks, and everything else. This must, just so you know, Elmo, no one thinks that you just got a song. You work hard on this song. You've worked hard on it. You've paid attention to it. You've nursed it. You've made it available, and you perform it. And today, you're nice enough to come on here and talk about it again. You work this song. It's not just an accident that it's successful. Yes, you do it well, and it's a song that people like to sing, but there's a lot of work involved on your end in keeping this thing up in the air.
Steve, that's the best thing anyone's ever said. It is true. It's a labor of love, but we have done a lot. When I first got the song, I recorded it, and of course nothing happened. But the radio stations, I could see that there was some kind of interest, even though they were banning it here and there. That's sometimes a good sign. And after a couple of years, you know, I pitched to every record company. We did this. We did everything possible. And so around 1982, I made a new recording of it and made a whole album of Christmas songs, which I never thought I'd ever do. You know, usually only an established artist makes a Christmas album. So I made this Christmas album thinking that I could get a record deal and didn't. And then in 1983, I made a video of it. And that video cost about $30,000. And that was like $30,000 more than I had at the time.
So you were the, quote, producer in that. You put the money up for that.
I did, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so we made this video. We filmed the video, too. I mean, when you do it on film, it's really expensive. So it took, like, we had, it took a whole week, but two 16-hour days of shooting for that 3 minutes of video. And then after we did the video, I thought, you know something, I've spent like $50,000 on this project, and we haven't made a dime from it.
Mm.
And I really had buyer's remorse, or maybe you could say producer's remorse. And so I sent it to MTV, who was at that time, in 1983, MTV. They did get the Thriller album, but beyond that, they were just showing, people singing, where they'd show they'd put the camera on their hands playing the guitar for a little while, and then on their face singing for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
The videos weren't that great.
Well, yeah. Go ahead. Tell them about what you did on your video, though. It's a little different.
So in our video, we made it like a little movie, like we had the live action of everything happening, and we were... You know, we were lip-syncing to the track while we were doing all the live action. And so, we sent it away and didn't hear anything. And like late October, like early November, someone called up and they said, this is Lisa from MTV, and we got that video of yours, and we think it's fantastic, and we want to play it. You know, and I said, who is this? I thought it was one of my friends, you know. It was a joke, but it wasn't. So MTV started playing it, and they ended up, they played it for 17 years, as long as they played videos.
Mm.
And that's in the following year is when the record companies became interested. Our distributor in Nashville sold 250,000 singles, and then we started, things started moving, and then we got the record deal with Epic Records, and we started, and then later on, I started doing interviews a few years afterwards, but nobody believed the song was going to stick. So things just sit still, and every December 26th, the bottom would drop out, and I would always say, well, that was fun, but I wonder if it's ever going to happen again.
You don't still think that way, do you? All right, we just lost him. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to get him back right in the middle. I could hear him. He could not hear me. Let's call him back. I'm not done talking to Elmo yet. He's not done either. Hold on. Elmo, are you back?
Yes.
All right. We had one of those technical difficulties, folks, but it gave me a chance to play the instrumental version of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, which is on the Bluegrass Christmas album that you sent me. So that worked out well. We were just talking about how hard you've worked to get this song going, and I believe we were talking about the video. You know what? Something I wanted to ask you. Did you ever release this on a 45?
Oh, the Grandma song?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you really?
In 1979, we released it on a 45.
Oh, man.
When I say released it, I just made it.
You just made it.
I just made the song, and I got 500 copies made. That was the least you could make. And at the time, I was a veterinarian, and it wasn't, I didn't have the wherewithal to take it to a radio station. So a friend of mine took it to a radio station. A guy who I gave it to is like a Christmas gag gift.
No.
He took his copy to the radio station, and they started playing it. And so when they did, I found out about it and then wanted to get it in the store. So I took it, 10 copies to Tower Records. And they said, "Nah, we're not interested." And I said, "Well, I want you to put it in there. I think it'll sell." And so they took 10 copies, and I lived about an hour away, and I drove home, and there was a message on my phone that said, "This is Tower Records again. Could you bring us in 25 more copies of this song?" and I was really excited, and then there was a second message. It said, "This is Tower Records again. Could you bring in 500 copies of that song?" And so I went down and gave them all I had, I gave them all 500 copies that I had made.
Wow. This is such a neat story. And we were talking when we were reconnecting there, folks. And by the way, we're still talking to Elmo Shropshire on the phone. And proud singer and recorder of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Sometimes people tune in late and I have to remind them who we're talking to. I lost you for a minute. I got you back while we were waiting to get back on the air. I know that you're starting into the real busy season. And I know that Bluegrass Christmas and Dr. Elmo and Wild Blue, I know they're available, that you have a website, but I want to give you the chance to tell people how to get a hold of these things. Because as we're talking about Tower Records, they don't exist anymore. So there has to be a way for people to find the recordings that you have available for them to, all this great music that we're talking about. You have a website, I bet.
Yes, my website is Drelmo, like drelmo.com or drelmo.com.
Drelmo, okay.
And you can buy any of my albums there.
Okay. And you're obviously starting. I think I caught you just right before your real. You were saying while we were getting back on the air again that right after Thanksgiving, you just, I guess, I would just imagine you're like 24 hours, 7 days a week running around supporting this thing.
Well, we usually get up early to do East Coast interviews, and unless we go to the East Coast, which we do a lot of times. So it's funny that this is sort of a rags to riches story, and it's kind of a fun story, and everybody likes to recount it every Christmas, and there's new things that happen all the time as well.
Well, and then
so it's a great time at Christmas, you know, to reconnect with all of my friends in radio. A lot of them who have supported it for so long, and a lot of them who have been, you know, in the early days, tried to support it, and some of them got fired, too. So we like to laugh about that.
That's amazing. I saw that where a guy got fired. Well, he played it like 27 times in a row, though.
That's right, and I still don't understand why they fired him.
Really? 27 times in a row?
That's right, and that was before I could afford to pay him to play it, too.
Oh boy, this is such an honor for me to be able to get you and talk about banjos and bluegrass and all those influences in this great, it's just a great recording. And I know you have a great you have a band that you put together with the Wild Blue, and I've enjoyed this so much. Elmo, I hope you've enjoyed being on the show.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it, Steve, and I really enjoyed all the wonderful stuff you put up on Facebook. That made me appear to be much more than I actually am.
humble Dr. Elmo. Hey, could you, and some of the stuff that Pam sent me and said, Elmo can sing some of these live, and I'm not going to ask you to sing a whole song, but this one tickles me, and if you can do this for me, like a short verse from Don't Make Me Play That Grandma Song Again.
Sure.
Let's do that, and we'll...
Okay.
Go ahead, you go.
This is for the DJ who played it 27 times or more. Oh, no, don't make me play that grandma song again. Though that request line glows and glows, just as bright as Rudolph's nose, I'll do anything you say. I'll play them barking dogs all day, but please don't make me play that grandma song again.
Oh, man, that's great. I love that. Elmo, thanks, buddy, so much. I have to run into you. You got to come back down to the camp sometime. It's just so going on, and we're still having a good time down there, and people would love to see you drop in again sometime. I think next year it's in September.
I'd love to do it, too. I hear it's better than ever.
It's great. It's in September next year, early September. So,
all right.
So give it a think, man. Keep in touch with me, please.
I will. Steve, thank you for everything. It's been such a pleasure to be on with you, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your birthday.
Well, thank you so much, man. And listen, enjoy your busy season coming up, and then don't worry, after December 26th, it'll catch fire again. Let's get past that little bit of phobia, all right?
All okay, right. Steve.
See you, man. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks, buddy.
All right,
bye-bye.
Bye. That was fun. Elmo Shropshire, what a great guy. I mean, it's you don't get the full story all the time. And, you know, yes, he has this great song. And you can just tell from, I mean, all of the things that he's done with it, the list of things and firsts and all this stuff. I mean, I can't get Elvis. I cannot get Elvis, but I can get Elmo. And that's the second guy. That's the number two guy in the Sony Christmas catalog. So much fun. Thanks so much, Elmo. Thanks, Pam, for getting all this arranged. Nothing to me is going to be as much fun as having Elmo on. That was just a blast. Thanks so much, Dr. Elmo. And audience, I think you should feel like you got an early Christmas present. I do. And I wish the best in the world to Elmo and Pam as they continue on with their musical career. Couldn't ask for a nicer guy for such a good thing to happen to, could you?